Welcome to Gratitude Geek. I'm your host, Candice Rodarte. In 2014, I had the privilege of interviewing Anne Fonfa. Anne was the founder of the Annie Appleseed Project and the Complementary and Alternative Cancer Therapies Conference. Anne was a 32-year breast cancer survivor who championed research, development, and implementation of alternative and complementary cancer therapies. Sadly, Anne passed away in February of 2024. Anne taught me to advocate for my own health. She also taught me that my metastatic breast cancer diagnosis is not a death sentence. It's a license to live life on my own terms, permission to give back and to pay forward. Anne Fonfa touched thousands of lives and left a lasting legacy. I'm humbled to once again share Annie's story. Enjoy this rebroadcast of episode 26, Natural Cancer Therapies. To learn more about the Annie Appleseed Project and the Complementary and Alternative Cancer Therapies Conference, visit gratitudegeek.com, episode 207. Stay groovy, Annie. Stay groovy. My guest today is Anne Fonfa, president of the Annie Appleseed Project, providing information, education, advocacy, and awareness on complementary alternative natural cancer therapies. Anne, what inspired you to start the Annie Appleseed Project?
You know, I was diagnosed with breast cancer 22 years ago this January, or actually this month. And I was suffering from multiple chemical sensitivity, which I don't know if people know about, but I was sick from every kind of exposure of smells, plastic, leather, vinyl, cleaning products, people's fragrances, and it made me pretty much have to take to my bed a couple of days a week. And sometimes I would fall down from a lack of muscle control. So being told I had breast cancer with zero symptoms, except for a kind of a callus on my breast, made me feel anxious, but not scared to death. I was suffering too much from the other. And when the doctor told me chemotherapy next week, and I said, well, doc, I have this problem. And he said to me, it doesn't really matter. And I said, no, can I just tell you what it is? And when I told him, he said, no, it doesn't matter. But I knew it would. So I decided not to do chemo. And that led me on the path to try to find out what the heck I could do. And I found so many things that I could try, and I began to try them. And, it was a fascinating experience because I actually had a recurrence less than 2 years later. And that was said to be, less than 2 years, it's really blah, 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 it's aggressive. But it turned out the pathology of the tumor was really slow. In fact, now it was slower than normal cells, and they told me not to do chemo. So I guess I was successful in a kind of strange way. And I continued to have tumors for 5 more years, eventually finding something that resolved that, and that was Chinese herbs.
So what treatments did you use?
Well, the first thing that I did was completely clean up my diet. You know, I had been a traveling salesperson, so I was out in the field a lot. And in those days, there was really no healthy food available. You couldn't go and have an organic meal or even a vegetarian meal very easily. So I kind of began to eat 100% organic. I brought my own food with me everywhere we went, including restaurants and friends' houses, any kind of trip I took, I brought food. And so that was one serious change. I began to be really strict about exercise, and I also, started taking yoga classes, and I never became a meditator. It's just not my thing, not a serenity person. But I found ways to focus on sharing the information, and that made me feel really good. I would find stuff and I would try to share it with people, and that was like a healing for me. And then I tried enzymes, and I began to use dietary supplements. And I tried a little bit of just about everything I heard of. I used magnets, I used heat treatment, all sorts of things, including acupuncture and applied kinesiology, finding out what I was allergic to and avoiding it. And then I went to a clinic in Mexico for the Gerson therapy, and I tried that. I began to juice and to do coffee enemas, and everything clearly made me healthier without actually stopping the cancer. But the cancer was growing so slowly that it was barely a threat to me. And I recognized that, although no doctor ever said, oh, Anne, you're doing great because look how slow it's growing. But it continued to recur. And I think that was because every inch of the breast tissue had cancer from the beginning. One of my surgeons, my second surgeon who I stuck with, told me that she felt it was the original tumor, which had been throughout my whole breast. But they didn't know that when the first surgeon did a lumpectomy. I should probably have had a mastectomy, but c'est la vie.
You mentioned the Gerson therapy. Can you talk to me about that?
So Gerson is 13 juices a day, all organic. It's also coffee enemas, 4 to 5 a day. I did 4 a day. The program lasts 18 months. When I went down to their clinic, I was the healthiest person at the clinic. There were people who had been through every kind of conventional treatment and their bodies were exhausted. Their immune systems were shot. They were a mess. But many, many people benefited and got stronger and healthier while I was there. But I only stayed for 2 weeks. Supposed to stay for 3. But because I was so well in comparison to everyone else, I was anxious to get back to my real life and get back to, you know, doing the program. So I followed that program. There were other things. There's injections of liver material, and there were a bunch of things. It's online on my website, annieappleseedproject.org. I kept a diary because I thought that would be interesting for people because, you know, it's scary to go to a foreign country. But my mother came with me as my companion, and that made it really homey and friendly. And my mother was one of the cleverest and funniest, wittiest people in the world, and she cheered up just about everybody at the place. And in fact, when we left, everyone said to me, "Bye, Anne. Oh, Lorraine, can we pay for you to stay? We'll pay for you. You could be my guest." 5 different people came up and asked her to stay and be their guest. It was a liar.
You know, it's true though that laughter helps you heal faster. So your mother had a healing effect on people.
I think so. They you know, great. It was good. And, you know, I also had the loving support of my husband. He was amazing because, you know, I was doing things the doctors were telling me not, you know, doctors wanted me to do chemo. They wanted me to do radiation. They wanted me to do hormonal treatment. And I was saying, no, I don't see it for me. It's just not right for me. And they were calling him at his office, you know, your wife's going to die. She doesn't want to do radiation, which, by the way, is not a life-saving treatment anyway. So that was odd. But, you know, a lot of things they kind of faked in those days to get their way. And that was wrong. I don't think it's just those days. Maybe it's all the time. But, you know, that was unfortunate. But I stuck to my position because I felt like I was in the right direction for me. And, of course, like I said, when each tumor was growing so slowly after the first one, and even that was slow growing, I felt like my, you know, vegetarian lifestyle, which became a vegan lifestyle, and the organic and the exercise, and then the kinds of little odds and ends treatments that I was trying over time were making a difference for me. And but, you know, I was tired of having so many tumors and so many surgeries. And eventually my surgeon said, you know, now you're going to need a plastic surgeon in the room if we take any more lumps off. And I decided I really had to find something that would work because of my chemical sensitivity. I couldn't do any kind of big surgery. I hated the bandaging. I was allergic to that, you know. So I found a Chinese herbalist, in fact, at the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium. So he had one foot in the mainstream camp, conventional, and the other deeply into Chinese herbal medicine. And he took me in hand. First, he said to me, oh, you have to stop everything you're doing. You know, I was taking a lot of vitamin C powder and a lot of different supplements. And he said, oh, you have to stop everything to do my herbs. And I said, no can do. This has kept me alive for all these years. It was 7 years later from diagnosis. And so finally we negotiated and I won. So I kept doing my protocol. And day one of the herbs, day one, my entire body broke out into hives. I mean, every inch was covered in hives. I had raised hives on my arms and legs. And naturally that was kind of a freak out. Mm-hmm. But a couple of days later, when it stopped, when they went away, I realized that my chemical sensitivity, which again was a senior problem in my life, had the symptoms completely changed. And I felt that the intensity of my reaction to them reduced by what I called 60%. That was a big thing for me.
That's
so
huge.
I felt a lot better and I could live like a normal life. You know, I could go out in public and I still don't hug people. I don't like to hug people anyway, but I didn't hug people because most people have fragrance and don't even know it. Mm. You know, it's on their clothing, it's in their hair, it's on the deodorant. And I didn't want to get next to that. So I spent years saying, no, it's great to see you. Just don't hug me. But anyway.
I say don't hug me because it
really
hurts.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, most people understand that. Well, also, you know, how do you avoid the flu? Don't shake hands with 2,000 people when you're at a cancer conference. You know, that's a really good way to get the flu. And I don't do that. So I tell people I don't shake hands. Just, you know, don't hug me. Just wave from a few feet away. That's fine. Yeah. Really happy to see you.
So when did you start the Annie Appleseed Project?
Well, I first started using the name in 1997. The company that I had worked for helped me create handouts, paper handouts. And then, you know, they were heavy to carry around. They got to be like 65 pages worth of information that I'd gathered. And then in 1999, someone said to me, hey, you know, you should have a website. And I said, I don't know how to do that. But I learned how to do it. And in June, the website went up June 1999. It had like 65 pages to start with. And, you know, we had 25 people visited, my friends and so on. But then I started what I knew how to do, which is networking and marketing. And I started asking cancer groups to see the website because we had the information that people were sort of becoming interested in, but didn't know what the heck they wanted to know. And we had put up these pages. And over time, I put up more pages. I would search, became my full-time job. So I would look through journals and go to meetings and talk to people and get all this information and put it online. And then I would contact everybody and say, hey, we put up this great article. You should see it. You know, I have one of them in front of me that I found from August 1996. And it's from the Journal of the National Cancer Institute. And it's talking about studying lavender to work like raloxifene or tamoxifen. And I found that just so interesting. And, you know, in 1996, there was a real thought that lavender might be an appropriate direction, you know, and that's a non-toxic natural aroma therapy or topical essential oil. Of course, that was 1996, and now it's 2014. Where's lavender now? Is it in the armorarium, so to speak? No. So nothing happens because it's a natural product. And the problem we have in our country is that Big Pharma runs the system and they don't experiment or look at anything they can't patent, which they've told me publicly hundreds of times. Yeah. They say right from the podium, oh, and we can't patent that. And that should be the end of discussion. But of course it isn't. How can it be? I can't let it be, which is where my advocacy comes in. I feel really, it's really important to bring out the natural things that could work. So many things work for some people some of the time.
Exactly. And it's a matter of finding what works for you. And
not well, that's right. But you know, that's
everybody's true. Cancer is different. I'm estrogen and HER2 positive and right. PR negative, progesterone negative. And so mm-hmm. that's going to be a different protocol than someone who's triple negative or triple positive or who's just HER2 positive. Or, I mean, there's just so many different ways to treat the different. I mean, there's as many treatments as there are, or there are as many cancers as there are treatment options.
So, well, and you know, Candy, one of the things that has been talked about recently, they've been saying, you know, personalized medicine, but we don't have that because even knowing the type of cancer you have, as everyone always says, it's very heterogeneous. So everybody's cancer has complications of other things going on that we may or may not find over time. If the tumor spreads or becomes metastatic, you have different things going on. Now they know that's changing. And so each of us really needs that personal touch. And one of the things I found through my work and through my study for myself, even though I didn't do conventional treatment, the stuff that I was doing could be used very often alongside conventional treatment to reduce the toxicities, to enhance the treatment, and to keep the person well. Because, you know, we kind of forgot over time that there's a human being behind that cancer. Yeah. And it became originally, you know, kill the tumors, kill the cells, kill the cancer, and hope the host, you know, those pesky hosts survive. And that's not good enough for me. And that is one reason that I started the project, so that other people could see there were things they could do while in treatment that could reduce the horrors of the treatment. I mean, treatment, you know, I don't want to be rude, but it sucks, you know?
It does. It does, because I opted to do the treatments. And I have the opposite, yeah, you know, I chose the opposite path. I am doing alternative, you know, and I'm doing complementary, doing acupuncture and a couple right. other things, but... yeah, I chose to do the chemo and the radiation and the surgery.
And most people do, and that's why I recognize that it's important to be used as a complementary medicine.
Yeah. But I'm using the aromatherapy, and I am doing the acupuncture and trying to pay attention to my nutrition. You know, paying attention to foods that don't have soy. I didn't stop eating meat, but maybe I should. I don't know. Cut way back on
sugar.
Soy
is a funny thing. Cut down on sugar, no soda, no deep fried foods. But soy is tricky. Genetically modified soy, which is most of it, unless it says organic, it's crappy garbage and we shouldn't be eating it. But organic soy in the form of tofu or tempeh or even soy milk is really not unhealthy. There have been some other studies that clearly show, and I saw what they experimented with. I follow this stuff. They were looking at candy bars supplied by Daniel Midlands, I forget. Big company. And the candy bar had soybean oil, which is definitely genetically modified and so far removed from soybean that it was the wrong thing. And so those tests were always bad. But when they actually look at you know, real foods, tofu, tempeh, soy milk, organic, that was helpful. There, you know, in effect, suggestion that it occupies the receptors the same way that tamoxifen or aromatase inhibitors do to block estrogen. So, you know, there's something there that hasn't been pursued again because Big Pharma controls what we what the choices are that, you know, that gets looked into, because it takes so much money to conduct a real clinical trial, and that can't be. Mm-hmm. However, what I call the preponderance of evidence, which is a lot of other kinds of evidence, is available, and that's what speaks to me. And I look at that and I say there's so many inferences and ideas and studies that have been done in a smaller way that, you know, indicate the successful use of organic soy. And I personally eat organic soy products every week.
Okay. So in the best of all possible worlds, if a mega billionaire came in and said, I will fund these trials, that would be the only way that we could compete with Big Pharma if we wanted to make a huge move towards natural.
Yeah. But, you know, if you say to yourself, as I often do, is nutrition really a drug? Should it be looked at in the same way that we look at pharmaceutical products? Because, you know, every drug created by pharma, most of them come from nature. You know that. They're based on herbs and things. And that's fine. But once they're changed to be patented, they're toxic. So they're all going to create harm. They're all going to be helpful. So they're harmful and helpful almost to the same degree, which is very problematic. But when you're looking at nutrition or dietary plan, first of all, you need to individualize it. And second of all, and that's not part of the system. You know, everything has to be standard. That's not going to work. And does it really need to be done the same way? I don't think so. And when an herb or acupuncture has been thousands of years in human use, does it need to be looked at in a clinical trial the way you look at a pharma that's just been invented, that's known to be harmful and helpful? I don't think so. So that billionaire would have to talk to me first.
Well, and I find it, I find it very disturbing that as a society, we accept these toxic drugs over the natural alternatives. I mean,
well,
as a society,
you know, money talks.
Yeah. We've just been programmed to believe that the toxic drugs are better.
Well, and the toxicity, you know, that when they're presented to the FDA for approval, everybody's statement is there were no unexpected toxicities. Now, I've been at FDA hearings, and I say unexpected toxicities, yeah, but the expected ones, they're terrible. We just accept it because, oh, that's cancer, you're going to have to suffer. I don't accept that part. I think we've changed that a lot being advocates to say, well, there are real people here who are suffering real issues, and they're not just short term. It's not just that you vomited for 25 hours in a row. You know, also, you damaged your heart, you may damage your lungs, you may damage your liver, you may damage your kidney, and so it goes. And that's too casually accepted. We must protect ourselves while we're in treatment in ways that should be studied with the drugs to make sure, you know, that it's doing the appropriate thing. But that's not happening either, and that's incorrect. We just have nothing. Unless they come up with a drug, nobody pays any attention to it, and that is wrong.
Yeah.
Wrong. I was just looking at something I wrote in 2001, and I said, never tell a patient when they're going to die. And this is a really serious issue from my mind. I mean, doctors are asked by people all the time, Doc, am I going to live? You know, and Doc says, well, you probably have a year or 6 months or what. You know, they don't know. We should never accept anything like that. We shouldn't ask, but we certainly shouldn't. They shouldn't say anything. They should say, I don't know. How can I know? You're an individual. You know, do your very best. Live every day to the fullest and so on. But I wrote that, and I said many people take it to heart, and they die on schedule.
I believe that. My mother had leukemia, and she kept pestering the doctor, how long do I have? How long do I have? And he said a year, and she passed away exactly a year later. She gave herself an expiration date.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, it's really, really sad. It's just, it's really true. I mean, a lot of us hear it that way, you know, oh, yeah, you have a year. Well, that's, and a year, you know, a year's a long time. A lot of things can happen.
Yeah. And, you know, and then the psychological thing of my mom having passed away from cancer 3 years ago, and then I have cancer, and, you know, then telling the doctor I didn't want to do all the things that my mother did because of the horrible. I mean, she died from MRSA. MRSA is what killed her, which she got in the hospital, you know, because the only way you get MRSA is in the hospital. And it was the treatment that killed her. It wasn't necessarily the cancer. And when I was first diagnosed, I was so afraid that that was going to happen to me. And I had to come to terms that my cancer is not my mother's cancer, and I'm not going to die. So that was a really hard stumbling block for me. So let's get back to you. Okay, you were recently in Houston for an educational conference. Talk to me about the conferences, how often you go to them, what's involved, what do you do?
So one of my ideas, and this was introduced to me by a fabulous advocate named Helen Schiff from New York, that if we were there at conferences, we could talk to researchers. That was her thing. And she would go directly to researchers. I got up and asked questions from the beginning. And I thought it's really good to interact and ask questions and hear the information up front and to tell them my point of view. And I used to get up and say, hey, are there any clinical trials looking at antioxidants with chemotherapy? Really like to know if it's okay to do that. And they would say to me, oh, no, we don't have any of those studies. But, you know, year after year after year after year, I'm asking these questions. I thought eventually they'll hear me and maybe there'll be some studies. But I also saw that by asking questions, you could change the conversation. You could open some eyes. And, you know, we talked about nutrition, and I talked and mentored to people, mentored advocates to ask these questions about nutrition, about exercise. And so I go to a lot of conferences to ask the questions, to bring on the issues. And over time, those issues, those questions have become part of the conversation. Now, almost every cancer conference, except the most mainstream, have something on nutrition for people with cancer, have something on exercise, have something on relaxation and meditation. And, you know, some things have gotten across. And when there are cancer patient organizations that have conferences, they will discuss essential oils, they'll discuss massage, they'll discuss much more of the possibilities, you know, they'll discuss dietary supplements and so on. There's, like I said, a lot of information. So when I was in Houston, I was there for the Society for Integrative Oncology. It was their 11th meeting, and I have been present at 10 of them. I've been a member since the beginning. I thought that was a really important area to pursue, integrative oncology. Of course, most of the people who are involved work within hospitals, and they're really kind of stuck with what the mainstream view is. So, for example, MD Anderson, which was one of the founders of this organization, they had an integrative medicine department many, many years already, or more than 15 years. And the founder of that doctor said to me years ago, I say, how's it going? He says, well, about half the doctors are recommending our services to their patients. So that was great, you know, half the doctors. And then a few years ago, I asked him, he's no longer there, but I said, how's it going over there? And he said, oh, about half the doctors are recommending it to their patients.
Wow.
So many people, if your doctor doesn't say, hey, you should consult a nutritionist, they may or may not realize they should consult a nutritionist, but really everyone should. They may or may not realize that their fatigue could be helped a little bit, at least by exercise or relaxation techniques or, you know. So the other thing that Antiopsy Project, we have this thing called 3 Steps for Health, number 4. And it's the first step is eat one more fruit and one more vegetable every day. So this is a message we bring to the mainstream doctors, and they like it because there's no tools involved. It's just the person. One more fruit and one more vegetable. Second step is take a walk. You know, we don't define how long or how much or any of that. Just take a walk. You know, and to me, I say, don't ever take the escalator. I mean, my God, the escalator is one step. You know, one step, you'll never achieve anything. And the third one is take 7 deep breaths before treatment, before bedtime, before a stressful moment, you know, it actually does relax you. And it's all about learning your own best, you know, way to behave.
So but what is that? What is that called?
Three Steps for Health.
3 Steps for Health.
We have a postcard that we also, you know, our volunteers hand out our materials all over the country, actually internationally. So these postcards are available. They're very colorful. They have really cute little drawings drawn by a survivor, and they help people with the message. This is, you know, it's about you. Make yourself well. And now that mainstream medicine is moving toward immunotherapy, which, by the way, years ago when I was diagnosed, they said, oh, your immune system doesn't matter at all, which I knew was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because I had a failing immune system due to the chemical, you know, as witnessed by the chemical sensitivity. I knew that was crazy. And now the idea is, oh, yeah, your immune system. So it's an opportunity for groups like ours, if there are any. No, just joking. There are groups like ours, just not around as long. So, I mean, but our point is, build yourself up. You have nothing to lose by getting yourself healthier, everything to gain. And that's really important. And also, I've always believed it's the combination of healthy behaviors. It's not any one thing. You can't change one thing in your life and, you know, and that's that. It has to be a lot of different things. I mean, I think, you know, eating better, and we define it, eat more fruits and vegetables, you know. And of course, if I came up to the other steps, they would be, as you said, no sugar, you know. No deep fried foods, and chips are deep fried foods. And even at healthy conferences or health conferences, they hand out, you know, a sandwich or a wrap, a salad, an apple, a cookie, and a bag of chips.
Yep.
Throw those chips away. They're really not good. So very troubling situation. And they serve soda. I always throw them away, cover them up, put up big signs, hand people notes. Soda's poison. There's zero benefit for the body.
Yeah.
Zero. Never buy it. Never bring it in the home. That's what I tell parents.
My next door neighbor stopped drinking soda and lost 40 pounds. That's the only thing. She didn't exercise more. She didn't change her diet. All she did was stop drinking sodas, and she lost 40 pounds.
Wow. That's kind of scary.
Yeah, it's frightening. So what kind of cancers are covered in your work?
We actually have expanded to everything. When I was first diagnosed, I was focused on breast cancer the first couple of years. But after a while, I realized that the things, you know, the thing that's important to me is it's a human body. It's not a type of cancer body. You know, we all have the same base when we start out. What cancer going, you know, cancer's your own cells going haywire. We don't exactly know why it goes to one area or another, but we do know that if you build the host yourself, that'll help. And all of the things in the natural world pretty much are general. They are not specific. And that used to be one of the arguments against it, because pharma's always got this drug or that drug targeted to a particular disease. But that's because it costs money to target the whole thing, so they only target one or the other. But what we say is, look, try these things. They're non-toxic. They may help. You know, they're not going to harm you. Then they may help you. And all of the things are general. They're not for a specific disease. So really, it's just about every cancer. And the people who have rare cancers where they don't know what the heck to do for them, build yourself up first. That's really, really important. I mean, our society, we're so unhealthy these days. So few people eat enough fruits or vegetables, defined as 9 a day minimum, you know, that they're going into treatment weakened, not in good shape. And that does not help for treatment. The healthier you are, the healthier you'll come out. Especially, you know, acupuncture is really useful because it can deal with the blood counts. It can deal with the fatigue. It can deal with the nausea and many other things. I mean, acupuncture balances our bodies. I personally love acupuncture. For me, when I had acupuncture the first time, I didn't even know what was going on. But in 3 months, my menstrual cramps went away and they never came back. And it was like a miracle. You know, it's a fabulous system, I think, and everyone should be doing it. Every hospital should offer it. It should be covered by insurance. Yeah. I have a petition going around on Facebook and through the internet to get Medicare, CMS, to cover acupuncture for Medicare and Medicaid. It would reduce costs and it would be so useful, and it doesn't cause harm.
It would.
And it can help.
It would. I don't understand why things that would reduce the overall cost of healthcare aren't covered by healthcare.
Yeah, it's like the insurance companies are blind, deaf, and dumb. It's really pathetic.
Yeah, they don't blink at paying $30,000 for my chemotherapy, but if I want to go see an acupuncturist for $75, they won't cover that.
Oh, and by the way, when I say dumb, I don't mean speechless. I mean stupid. But anyway. No, that's right. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense. We'd rather spend a lot more. I said to them when I was diagnosed, I said to the company, you know, my insurance company, look, I'm going to do something that costs a tenth. That's supplements, dietary supplements. Why don't you cover that? And I promise I'll never do chemo. And they said, forget it. Yeah. They couldn't even imagine it.
Yeah. It's really hard to fathom. Okay. So what advice do you have for people who want to become alternative therapy advocates like you?
Well, you know, you have to read a lot. You have to become aware. We put up information on Facebook. That's the royal we, by the way. I pretty much am the one who does that. But what I do is I read a study and I critique it. So I've learned to look at things in a way that asks a lot of questions. I took the basic science training from the National Breast Cancer Coalition, whose board I am proud to serve on. It's called Project LEAD. And that educates you in science. And once you have that basic education, you can kind of understand. I also took courses, Food is Medicine, Cancer Guides, and I'm a Cochrane consumer. It means I've been trained to understand how to read studies, how to understand. And most doctors don't even understand as well as some of the patient advocates in the world, not myself, but there are some amazing people out there. But so people need to get educated. They need to get into community. They need to, you know, join other groups of advocates. There are online groups. There's a lot of discussion on Facebook, of course, going to meetings, meeting with advocates, speaking up, asking questions. I train my people. This, you know, they say there's no dumb questions. When we ask questions, they're not dumb because we want to know. And many times doctors come up to us in the hall and they say, oh, I'm so glad you asked that because I didn't really know what they were saying, or I really wanted to know the answer to that myself. But most doctors fear looking dumb, but we don't care. We got nothing to lose. We're not professionals. We're people who want to know answers, and that's why we ask questions. So it can be done, and people can contact me if they want to get going. The Department of Defense does some research in a lot of different disease areas, including a lot of cancers. And they're always looking for, you know, people who want to learn more, ask questions, review grants, you know, from the patient perspective. And I help people learn how to do that. And I'm perfectly willing to do that for anyone who has an interest. They can reach me by going to our website, annieappleseedproject.org.
Okay. That sounds great. So this, you know, I'm the gratitude geek. This show is all about gratitude and pursuing your passion profitably and being who you want to be. So who do you appreciate?
I'd have to say the advocates who came before, the advocates who are with me now, my husband, my mother, my sister. There's so many amazing people in the world, and I've been so lucky to meet them. I mean, I feel like I've known some of the most important and amazing women, and a few men, mostly the advocates are women, I have to say, in the world. And I am so grateful that I had the opportunity to work with them.